but we will see. Welcome back. This second session focused more specifically on the use of the information and communication technology. We start with Jaana and Raimo, and they will give an overview of the country's responses. Please, Jaana and Raimo.
Thank you. And before we start, I'm briefly reflecting the use of information communication technology we started in the morning. I mentioned that this conference is a subsequent meeting of the final meeting of the European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network, ELGPN, which launched the European Guidelines for Policies and Systems Development for Lifelong Guidance, which is a reference work for the EU and the Commission. And these guidelines include some references to the national development, highlight some key questions which needs to be addressed, identifies elements which indicate good policies, and also provide resources for policymakers. There are some transversal guidelines which go across the sectors, and also then guidelines which relate to schools, vocational education, higher education, adult learning, employment, social inclusion, youth, and so on. And one of the transversal guidelines, number 9, is the use of information and communication technology in lifelong guidance. And this is partly one of the rationales behind what we were looking at when we were asking the questions on the use of ICT and integrated guidance system. And the following slide provides a brief summary and overview of the findings we found in the 17 countries' responses. So, Jaana, I hand over to you.
Once again, you can see that in these 17 country papers, there were now 5 different areas where we could recognize that there were differences between countries. And these were the rationale for ICT use, approach to ICT, function of ICT, and then distance career services and training, how the training is organized, and training for use of ICT in guidance. In the first category, the rationale for using is widening the access. Just approach to ICT is very much technology focused. Which kind of technology we can use, which is most effective for use it for means for delivering information. Excuse me. Countries mentioned that the distance carrier services are in they are non-existent and. There is no specific training for the use of ICT in guidance in national levels.
After a couple of years of experiences in the use of ICT, it seems that the rationale for ICTs is look for consistency across the sectors of the service delivery. What could be the minimum level of the services, for example? And then the approach is on content, what career information and career resources could be delivered through the help of ICT. And the function of ICT is mainly a medium to one-to-one communication, either an email or video conferencing. And if we look at the distance career services, it's mainly asynchronous services, not chat yet, for example. And then the training of the practitioners, it's a very bottom-up approach, so it's a quick response to the emerging need or the gaps in the competencies among practitioners. So we call them like having ad hoc courses on this matter.
In countries that have already recognized that the rationale for use of ICT is in access and in increasing the consistency, in third level we can see that they start talking about the effectiveness on guidance and counseling by using the information and communication technology. The approach moves now not solely on focusing on the content, but much more on how do we use technology in most effective way so that citizens and individuals get the best services or they can reflect the questions that they have on their mind. And the function for ICT now expands not only being a medium for one-to-one communication, but a space for collaborative career exploration, where individuals share and can have reflections on the questions. And distance carrier services expand from being a solely a synchronous service possibilities where you only had a maybe website where one can question or emails, and it takes a time to include a synchronous mediums. It can be chats or videos or something that takes place more right on time or near right now. Sorry. And training for use of ICT is now expressed that it is a part of initial training programs. Due to the fact that they also start thinking about the methodology, they also recognize the importance of having the ICT as a part of the training programs.
We have also examples of countries which are reaching integrated guidance systems, and then the rationale for the use of ICTs is to promote the efficiency of the existing system, how to manage the resources and having the integrated elements embedded in the system. And then the approach of ICT is now looking at the guidance as a whole system, looking at the support of service delivery, evaluation services, looking at the quality of the services, and also creating the common conceptual framework across the sectors. And then we come, we are getting closer to the co-careering elements. So the use of ICT, it provides a space for co-careering. And then the function of the or the role of the professionals is slightly different. So in a way, they are part of the system. So they are not using it anymore it as a tool or media. And then instead of the distance carrier services, we have like multi-synchronous, multi-channeled services. And then the training of the use of ICT, as well as the development, is focusing at the same time how we are using also the training in developing the system as such, not only how we develop the competencies of the practitioners. So we are developing also the guidance methodology, how to embed and take the full advantage of the additional features of technology in the overall system.
And also in training, on this most advanced way, I would say that it is a continuous process where career professionals have a possibility to share their own experience and reflect and co-learning. And that is it's a clear difference between the previous ones.
And some of the findings are really close to the previous research we did and published as an outcome of the conference last year in Rome on the fifth conference of European Life and Guidance Policies, where we're examining the same issues, and the article was published in the IAVD journal. So if you want to read more in these details, that's available. And now we hand over to the next speakers.
Thank you. Now we are starting the national case studies from Finland. In Finland, we have had a number of online career services and resources, but one of the challenges has been, like in many other countries as well, that we have been development by different government sectors. Last week in the National Meeting Point project establishment, a national cross-ministerial working group to support the national ISF-funded development project to create a joint vision and a conceptual framework for future integrated online services. It's good. This group has a mandate to follow up the development work during the next 2 years. So we have coming very important thing. Mr. Marko Kilpeläinen started 1 month ago as a web serve planner in a meeting site project. Before joining this team, he has worked as a project management international action program from e-service and e-democracy, as we Finnish say, SADE, leading various web application development projects. He has totally of 15 years experience in EC management. During his study, currently he's studying in Jyväskylä Teachers Education College to become a vocational teacher in spring 2016. So fine. Mr. Kilpeläinen will now introduce the current vision of e-guidance services for future national development. I hand over your Mr. Kylpeläinen.
Okay, thank you for the introductions. And I want to participate already now, the online participants, so I would like to give you a shout out there. Keep the message board lit as you did in the morning, so we have your contribution as well. So in this presentation, basically I will be covering the second pillar from the morning's first presentation. So we have the similar reason why we are building this than what we have for the one-stop guidance centers, and we are sharing also the same overall goal. So integrating youngsters to our society, to our education, and to our working life. So basically, the two parts here, we are forming the supporting structure, so the load-bearing structure for our house, if you want to call it like that. And together we are forming this kind of entity, so yin and yang, or Batman and Robin, or could it be Beavis and Butthead? I don't know yet. It's only one month that we have been working together. But anyway, there was comments previously that is it ICT or is it one-stop guidance centers or should it be a combination of them? But definitely both have roles there, and I think that they need to fulfill together the needs for the youngsters that we are currently having. So Pasi explained this picture very well, so I won't be spending too much time on moving on to this picture. And it is a complex one. It tries to map the different services that we have inside lifelong guidance in Finland. And as my vast experience of 1 month, I'm not perhaps the right person trying to explain all the fancy details there. But anyhow, what is the ICT role here? It is clear that one of the LLT development guidelines in Finland is that we should make the services available for all. And ICT by nature is that kind of thing that it lowers the threshold or the barriers to enter those kind of services. So definitely ICT will be a big player in there in a country that we have long distances as well as the resources are very scarce. So definitely ICT more and more will be a part of the lifelong guidance policies in Finland. The other part for ICT is basically that we should strengthen the individual's career management skills by providing accurate information about the labor market situations, what kind of trainings are there, and what is leading basically to different occupations. And it is also in this picture presented there. One last thing that I think is one of the weakest points currently in our system is that for the practitioners, there is no such a common coherent system to develop these services based on the feedback and the quality indicators that we would have. So definitely there is plenty of room to improve the overall situation here. Okay, next few slides are example services, what we have in Finland currently available. They are the first slide covers the employment services as well as the educational services. And then the second slide covers the association and societies services that are available through the net. So there's no point of me reading through these points, and the material, as I said, will be available. But basically, we have different sites if the information concerns job seekers, employers. There are different sections inside these services that are guidance-oriented, we have different tasks and that type of things. Plus, we have truly e-services for like, let's say, registering to be a job seeker or in the educational services side to apply for us to be a student. Both have elements on the information side, so providing different informations related to the institutions, educational institutions, as well as what kind of local public employment services are available. The labor market information part is very interesting, and it is something that we will be focusing on quite heavily also when we are developing this kind of new coherent system for the web-based guidance. Okay, here we have the existing other types of guidance services. They are basically all low-threshold guidance and counseling services, either directing users to municipal or then national services. And we have quite a lot of them there. But I think these two slides illustrate the issue that we are having. So we have quite fragmented services, and there is not much room for this kind of cooperation and this co-careering that was mentioned there. So that leads basically to the other part of this presentation. That is basically my main job at the moment is basically trying to get started this kind of overall e-guidance service or web-based service and starting to formulate the vision what we have there. Now we have the first poll question there.
And the question is, from your perspective, what do you assume, what is the most likely risk to the development of the e-guidance services? Integration to existing services or lack of common architecture and technology, unclear targets or commitment of different parties to the common target? So, how would you reflect these findings compared to your findings in Finland so far?
Yeah, let me get back to the microphone. It's not a surprise. So, obviously, the architecture technology part, I think all of you also from the other countries are facing the same situation. And that is the commitment of different parties. So it is quite sad, but it is a reality that we also need to tackle when we are developing this kind of new coherent system. Okay, I have the controls again. So this is the vision part, and don't be too judgmental about this picture. This is a work of 1 month approximately. Of course, others have been thinking about the same thing quite some time earlier. But our basis, of course, is the user's need. What is their, what is why the person is seeking information, or what is in on the mind of that person? What we vision for 2020 is those earlier services that were shown in the couple of earlier slides, they will have a role there as well. We don't know yet what those services are. Are they exactly the same ones than we had there? But nevertheless, they will play a part in this overall picture. But then what we are really trying to build now is this kind of overall platform for e-guidance. And it is basically at the moment that we are starting to think this, we then realize that it is not only the actual user that is using the system who has a stake or has a role in this development. So definitely these existing operators and different persons from different sectors will have a role there. So in this setup, basically we are getting or hopefully building a new tool to cooperate and basically develop things further. And as there is the first part in the green box, the information layers there, it is something also that these new cooperations are creating this kind of new information there. Hopefully we are able to provide something new, getting more relevant and qualify the data that is provided, and then target the quality. It is something that if person really needs assist or guidance, that we are offering immediately the right set of information and data. Okay. Part of the new web-based service needs to be secured. We have the legislation in Finland so that it is something that we need to think about, that what is the level that we are protecting the services. Definitely something needs to be open, and that is something we need to tackle and find out during this development period. What is the reasonable level, and if there's something that we need to influence also in the legislation side. This is the first part, that how is this web-based system able to function. Is that basically we need to know that why the person is there. What type of, what is, Raimo mentioned this morning, and it is stuck in my head now, that what is in the mind of that person? Why is the person there? And based on this assessment or needs evaluation or whatever it will be, then we are then forming the path where we are basically guiding the person. It might be simply an information, or if it's then totally obvious that this person needs to be in the face-to-face guidance, for instance, go to the meeting center, that's then the job of this system to do so. One of the first things that has popped up in these early days of the development is that we need to have some kind of online calendar that helps the booking for different sectors. And it consumes quite a lot of time from the actual user side as well as from the different operators in the different services. So trying to get the realistic view on the calendars and when they are available for helping the persons. Then definitely there will be e-services there. Unfortunately, we cannot really say that what they will be. But we try to put some attributes, what kind of things they should be. And these two boxes came up there, and these are the attributes that we want those services to be like. So findability, availability, usability. I think those are pretty clear terms and don't need to be opened up too much. Then from the user's perspective, this confidentiality, self-determination, and human agency are those that would make sense, or we should emphasize those. So human agency is the capacity for making decisions and so on. So the actual driver of the process is still the actual user, or then the user together with some other operators from the different sectors. From this cycle, there needs to be some kind of reports and that type of results that are stored and further utilized, and they are there. We need to have or possibilities for different communication methods as well as cooperation between the different parts in the system. This control assessment, quality control, feedback development box is basically that we are capturing the data, how the guidance has proceeded, and what is the outcome of that. Okay, these are the key strategic questions that we are currently looking at. So how do we proceed from the fragmented services into one-stop e-guidance? What is our contribution to the overall guidance policy? And how do we really then organize the governance of the service once it is developed and taken into use? Okay, this is, like I said, I have my long background in IT service management, and this ITIL is a framework for IT service management. And the reason it is there is basically the definition of quality. So it is the ability of the service to provide the intended value. And basically the value is then calculated so that it is utility plus warranty. And those terms are explained there. So fit for purpose and fit for use. So both of those are really important in this picture.
May I ask quickly?
Very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the way you define the ability of a product service progress to provide intended value for the client, is that?
It depends. It could be the client or then the one that is using the service to help the client. Okay, last poll question.
And this relates to the issue what Mr. Kilpelainen highlighted last. What type of indicators should we implement for measuring the quality of e-guidance services, what he described? The availability, usage, user satisfaction, or service coverage?
Do you prioritize in this, what is the most important?
How does this relate on your plans or its previous experience?
It would be great that if it would be like that. That should be the satisfaction, yes, definitely. Not the usage and that type of things, but yes. Suits me very well. Okay, I'm already 1 minute or something like that over the time. So I would just like to emphasize that, or in the words of Barack Obama, that change will not come if we wait for some other persons or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for, and we are the change that we seek. So we need to do, and we need to do this quickly. So,
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marco. Right, and then we go to Denmark. Ms. Hanne Voller, she works as a special advisor at the guidance unit in the Danish Ministry of Education. And Denmark has been developing their online carrier services during the last years. Ms. Woller will introduce the key elements of the national e-guidance e-vägledning system. I hand over to you, Hanne.
Thank you so much. I think I will start the introduction of the e-guidance system by having a step backwards and have a view of the guidance system in Denmark before 2004. And then I will end my presentation by giving you some reflections about what is going to happen when you have that strong political will to have a coined guidance system, because it has some cost for the guidance system and for the users. If I start with the beginning, before 2004, we have a lot of different guidance system in Denmark. I think we had about 30 different guidance system with as many guidance program and different guidance skills in Denmark. The largest group was, of course, the guidance in the compulsory schools, and it was typical a teacher who was half-time teacher and half-time guidance practitioner. In 2004, there was a very strong political will to make a coined system of guidance in Denmark. So we, or they, focus on the guidance in the transition system from the compulsory schools to the youth educations and from the youth education to the university. The parties in Denmark couldn't agree about a coined adult guidance system. We have still a sort of guidance system for the unemployed people, but for the employed, especially the low-skilled people, we don't have a coined system yet in Denmark. Yes and no, because, of course, we have the e-guidance center, but it's not normal that a very low-skilled person contact an e-guidance. It's something about motivation and so on, and person-to-person guidance. So, the government use about 100 million euros for the guidance system, and compared to that, we are only 5.5 million citizens in Denmark. So there's a lot of there's a huge cut for guidance system in Denmark. We have in Denmark the youth guidance centers. It is centers, but the guidance practitioner is working. They are out in the schools, but they are connected to a center, and we have about 54 centers now. Most of the job are in the schools, and it's guidance, it's person-to-person guidance, it's group guidance, and so on. And then we have the regional guidance system. We have 7 guidance centers in Denmark, and they are typically placed in towns where we have your university. I will focus my speak on the guidance system for the young people in the compulsory schools. With this guidance system in 2004, the government also made a portal, and we still have the portal, the UG Educational Guide. And the educational guide, compared to other guides or databases of information and tools for choosing education program, is made by a staff placed in the Ministry of Education. So we have about, I think there's about 7 researchers who research about the educational program and do all the writings for the educational guide. And we have a lot of tools, and we still got more and more tools at the educational guide. It's very difficult for you to have a look at it because it is in Danish. Very little of the content in the educational guide is in English. I apologize, but so it is. And now we have the technology we use now in Denmark, and it's quite new with the e-guidance. But we also have a national portal for application for youth education program and further education programs. And I mention this portal because it's very important portal. It's mandatory to use the portal to have a digital application for youth education program and further education programs. And then we have a youth database, and I will explain what we're using the youth database for in a minute. Now I try to make a picture of how the technology is working together in Denmark from a youth perspective, from a guidance practitioner perspective, and from a government perspective. And I apologize my very primitive because I did it myself. they don't. Well, they run by themselves. Okay, I explained it. Okay, I can use this one. Here we have there. Stay there, please. We have a student in the lower secondary school, and today, when we have launched the e-guidance center, this student, if the student is one of the students who is not ready for further education, and we have estimated that about 20% of the students in the lower secondary schools are not ready in the 8th class. They're not ready yet for further education. Then this person are allowed to have personal face-to-face guidance. If the students are ready for further education, then he's not longer, we are not supporting financial support face-to-face guidance for this student. So the student and his parents need to use the e-guidance center. In the e-guidance center, it's open 7 days a week. It's open from 10 in the morning to 10 in the evening. The student and his parents can contact e-guidance by chat, by telephone, by SMS, and email, of course. And here he can have guidance for what to do after the lower secondary school. If the one is one of the 20% of the lower of the students in the lower secondary school, he can have some personal guidance face to face, and of course all the students will have guidance in collective guidance session and group guidance session and so on. But no one is has not every student in lower secondary schools have access to person to personal face to face guidance anymore in Denmark. We have the e-guidance. I will come back to the e-guidance, how we have organized the e-guidance center. When the young people are ready for application for a further education program, he had to use this. This is an application system for further education program. And you have to use this database for making an application for the upper secondary education program. In this database, we have all the information about how many students in the lower education program are ready for education and who are not ready for education. And this information the Youth Guidance Center can have. So they know exactly how many and who of the students are ready and are not ready, and who are going to have face-to-face guidance and who are not going to have face-to-face guidance. And of course, the government and the Ministry of Education can have information and have the data too. And the day after the closing day for application for the gymnasium or the vocational schools, of course, we know. Yeah, oh, 5 minutes. Oh, my God. We know how many students are going to have a vocational education and a gymnasium. The youth database are used when we have a dropout from the upper secondary schools. We have immediately information. They send information to the youth database, and the Youth Guidance Center draw information from a youth database. That means that we don't have any young people running around in the streets in Denmark because they are contacted by the Youth Guidance Center and have guidance to either educational program or perhaps jobs. We launched the e-guidance in 2011, and as I mentioned before, we have this chat, social media, group session, we have webinars, and we have a common chat on the e-guidance. The e-guidance center the guidance at the e-guidance center, it's typical half employed in the youth guidance center and half time at the e-guidance center. So they have a close connection to the youth guidance centers. They are professional and they have all an education program for the for guidance, the same educational program as the guidance in the youth guidance centers and in the Studieval. As I mentioned, in 2014, only 20% of the youth in the lower secondary school have access to personal-to-personal, face-to-face guidance. So there is a stress on the e-guidance center now because they have to offer guidance to all the students in the lower secondary schools who are not having access to face-to-face guidance. This is just data, how many who use the chat and email and so on. It's not that interest. You can see it's only 7% of the user of e-guidance who is among the target group for the e-guidance. Half of the user are the young people who are going to have a program in the university. And then we have a small amount of parents, and then about 28% are adults. Every year we make a survey among all the students in the lower secondary schools, and we have there's about 100,000 students, and we have about we have answers from about 60%. So there's a lot of answers we have. And if you can see from 2004 to 2005, the race of using and knowing the e-guidance is raising. But the outcome or the benefit of the use of the e-guidance is going down. And we have very, of course, the government is have focus on the guidance now. And as you can see, when we launched the e-guidance center, it was suddenly possible to cut down the personal face-to-face guidance, because now we have the e-guidance, and face-to-face guidance is a high-cost guidance system. So now the stress actually are on the e-guidance, because they have to perform more guidance with a higher satisfaction. So we have a nice guidance system in Denmark, and we have launched all the technology and so on, but it also have its costs, because it's so difficult to get the young people used to, and their parents, to use the e-guidance. It's more common to use the person you know in the school to talk. Why can't I talk to you? My friend can talk to you, but I can't have access to personal guidance. So we have a lot of challenge, even that we have all the technology in use in Denmark. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Hanna. Very interesting points you brought out. Okay, then we go to Estonia. And Estonia has developed a number of easy services for the citizens during the last years. And Ms. Margit Ramo, the manager of international relations from the Innove.
That's correct, yeah.
Foundation will introduce the latest development in Estonia.
Yeah.
I hand over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. How do you feel? I see some faces. I know it's our time after lunch and this time of the day, but I will try to be encouraging. So, good afternoon. So the aim of my contribution is not that much about guidance, but it is about e-services policy in Estonia. Of course, it influences e-guidance as well, but that will be the focus today. I work in a foundation in Norway. We have been dealing with guidance issues actually since 1998, when the European Network of National Resource Centres for Vocational Guidance was expanded to EU candidate countries then. And a small centre called Euroguidance Estonia was established. Over the years, we have been supporting developments both in labour and education, but currently we have the responsibility to develop services in education sector, and then also a big change from last year is that we are also responsible for the service provision through our regional guidance centres. So I have to say that we have, in terms of access to guidance, we have golden time in Estonia. So the fragmented service provision has been centralized, and the similar pathfinder centers for young people in regions have been established. And as well, from the beginning of this year, guidance services for working adults are available in our labor offices. So that wasn't a reality last year. And of course, systematic exchange in international level, that's part of our work. We are blessed with our kind and experienced colleagues in different international networks, and of course European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network members and Euroguidance colleagues have been great support for us. In addition, we cooperate with the network called Academia, which we organize international study visits for practitioners, so that's our focus. And another network in Europe called Erasmus Nice, and then we, with these partners, we focus on the academic training for career counselors. So these are the main four networks we are cooperating with. So now to the main issue. A small picture of Estonia. I know our Finnish colleague must know where is Estonia, but just to show you how small Estonia is and where we are situated, and that we are only 1.3 million people, actually. And we are surrounded by sea from north and west. We also have a big lake in east called Peipsi, and then, of course, our Baltic neighbors in Latvia in south. And a couple of pictures for you, but we have a time pressure, so I'm not going to introduce it in detail. So e-Estonia. For citizens of Estonia, different e-services have become really a routine. So e-elections, e-taxis, e-police, e-healthcare, e-banking. So the prefix e is really our everyday reality. And in terms of rationale, the impetus of starting the e-governance and e-services in Estonia was actually to improve and the access and efficiency of public services. And electronic governance is the application of ICT for delivering government services, exchange of information, communication transactions, integration of various standalone systems and services between government to customer, government to business, government to government, as well the office processes and the back office for the system. So we have had some great achievements. The launch of e-tax and mobile parking in 2000, and the latest achievement is the e-residency. So actually, e-residency is also a key for you, for e-Estonia. So for example, e-residents can digitally sign documents and contracts, encrypt and transmit documents securely, establish an Estonian company online within a day, and administer a company from anywhere in the world, and also conduct e-banking, of course. E stands also for efficiency, and we can say today that, for example, we are saving 2.5 times per each vote during the elections. And we have saved 2% of GDP with digital signature. So that's a lot of resources. And also an example from hospitals. They have calculated that 1/3 less queues in hospitals. So it really makes things efficient. Some more indicators that show the information society we have today. We are happy that the entire country is covered with the broadband. Schools and government institutions are nicely covered and equipped with ICT. Bank transfers, almost 100%, so it's very active in banking. And e-export, as the first achievement from 2000, it has been very quick, so it takes, you just accept what you see from the systems, and then it takes a couple of days and it's settled, so it's really efficient. And actually, Estonia holds the world record in participation in census over the internet. In 2011, 66% of population participated in census, but we can easily count it for 100. So, because although the door-to-door census took place, it was still filled in through the computers that were online. So what is the key to these e-services? It's the e-identity. National Electronic ID Card was introduced in 2002, and today it's really popular. It's compulsory for all residents, and 94% of the population have one. It is a certificate for authentication and digital signature, so we use it daily. Always when I go work, I put the ID card to my computer, and it works very quickly. And also mobile ID has become popular, so 20% of our population, they use mobile ID, so you can sign documents through your mobile phone. When discussing e-services, we have to keep in mind the security. In our national model, there are three aspects. So X-Road is the backbone of e-Estonia. It is invisible, yet crucial environment that allows nations' various e-services databases to communicate, both public and in private sector, and makes the harmony between the databases. So working together, we have the maximum impact. Integrity, KSI, it stands for Keyless Signature Infrastructure. So this is the item. It's like a blockchain technology that provides real-time integrity instrumentation for network digital assets. So it has major implications for the internet freedom, cyber security, and government accountability. So basically, all the operations of those networks can be monitored by systems administrators and government officials. E-services in education. There are several e-solutions developed in education. For example, the biggest bubble is the Estonian Education Information System. This is like the core information system. This contains data from original, it takes data from original source. There are core providers. It's about 2,000 institutions. It contains personalized data, and you can only access it with ID card, so it's really secure. And it cooperates with 20 different information systems, and it has approximately 45 X-Road Live services open, so it's a big amount of data that is moving there. EHIS is the name of the system then, and it's organized in 6 modules. It has the document certifying education, pupils and students register, teaching staff, educational institutions, textbooks and curricula. So it contains information through all education levels. And main X-Road services for individuals, for example again. Submitting applications for vocational education and training and higher education, so you can enter university online. And another example, applying for needs-based study allowance. Getting discount in public transportation, so ID tickets, so you can use it easily. For governments, some examples, for local governments, they are using it for planning school network and calculating headcount money. Or health insurance fund is linked, and the decisions about insurance cover are taken through linking these systems. In terms of e-guidance services, I would like to add that the situation is very similar to Finland. So we have fragmented websites, different institutions, so you can register online, we have a centralized email services, occupational databases, but it's not really communication between the public websites. So what are the... Is that the time for the poll? No. What are the challenges? I will introduce the challenges first. Sorry. So the main and the very important challenge we have to tackle with is digital competence development. It can be broadly defined as the confident, critical and creative use of ICT to achieve the goals related to work, employability, learning, leisure and inclusion and participation in a society. But even though the entire country was covered with a broadband and we have had since 2002, 2009 and etc. Courses for computer courses for population, we still have to say that our population lacks ICT skills, so we have to support it. And also one weakness is as teachers, access to digital infrastructure and learning materials is limited, so we want to improve it. There is a need to secure the interoperability of different information systems. So it would be very important to insert data only once. You know, currently having the separate databases, you include again and again who you are. So it would have efficiency if it's inserted only once. Thirdly, the international level. Considering the mobile society, we need to cooperate across borders as well. For example, having the portal for digital learning materials for Finland and Estonia, we need to keep the operability between the systems. Or in case an Estonian decides to continue studies after upper secondary school in Finland, in terms of information systems, this person is lost for us. And finally, open data. There is a challenge that it would make sense to collect and analyze the data. We have a lot of data, but we don't analyze it. And this analysis then would have a role in supporting the development of methodologies or decisions at national level, at policy level, in policy, yeah. So now it's the time for poll.
And the poll question relates now to the national challenges which Ms. Rammo identified. So now think of your own country again. Which one of the earlier mentioned challenges would be one to start with as a first step in your own country? Either digital competence, interoperability, cooperation and interoperability of the systems with other countries or with the open data. So what would be your priority? Can you mention about the open data, Margit?
It's the idea that having data in our different information systems, we don't use it, we don't analyze it to support policy making. I'm very happy. I'm very happy. So there are two major things: interoperability of systems, which means the system level is really important, but also our clients are in focus, their digital skills. So we shouldn't run in advance too long if we don't have people who can use it. Now, shortly about our lifelong learning strategy. As I said, that's actually the lifelong learning strategy that is the basis for the golden time of Estonian guidance. But when we are discussing the digital focus, then as well, this is one of the five main focuses in our lifelong learning strategy. And the objective is to apply modern digital technology in learning and teaching, in a more efficient way and with better results. We need to improve the digital skills of general population and to guarantee the access to the new digital infrastructure. So And in addition, increase awareness and interest in IT field and sector. We are very happy to have a very active association of information technology and communication, so our employers give a great help to promote this area and to raise awareness. And the main message is that whatever you do, you can't live up without IT. So it's across all the steps and actions, and it will be closer and closer every day. Yeah, I think that would be all.
Thank you. And now it's only 15 minutes to coffee break. And before that, comments and questions, and Raimo and Jaana are
Thank you.
Facilitating.
I think we heard three kind of different presentations, but they were sharing similar challenges. And I think one of the themes which were sort of when reading the wall was the case of Denmark. That in a way, we have been discussing Denmark from the perspective of policy development and the use of guidance. And I got the impression that there was an issue that guidance has had a function to support the individuals and in a way helping the citizens to develop their own skills as an individual. But now it has some selection features, which is not necessarily the task of guidance. And one of the questions we could start immediately from Hanne was that how do you select? What is the mechanisms in selecting who can have access to face-to-face guidance? And then there was also an issue whether you have if there's a demand for more intensive guidance process. Yeah, come on. We give you. You can use the microphone.
The youth guidance. Practitioner select, they have an assessment with three indicators. It's how you perform in the subjects. We have a scale from -3 to 12, and you have to perform for 4. It's for the subject, then you have to be, you have to have personal skills and social skills. And all three indicators must be fulfilled. And if you have that, you are ready for education. And we have, of course, the government have made an estimate before, and we could see how many students leave the compulsory school without having 4 in the subjects, and we can see it was about 20%.
What about, I have a practical question, does this imply that I have, you are selecting 20% of the age cohort in Copenhagen and then 80% in who are using the e-guidance, and then you take the 20% in Aarhus and then 80% in Aarhus, or
no.
Are you looking at the 20% of the old Danish population?
Actually, it's Denmark in common, and of course, in some parts of Denmark, the percent of not ready for education is much higher than 80%, and in some areas, it's lower than 80%. And I have to say, it's national founded, all the guidance, but for the youth guidance centers, it's placed and established in the municipalities, and we have about 10 municipalities who says we don't care about all the policies. So we found the rest of the money so that all students are having face-to-face guidance.
So this relates to the question that somebody is asking, that did I understand right that in Denmark 20% get the face-to-face guidance and 21 use e-guidance?
Yeah.
So 55% use neither?
Oh, they have access to the collective information, they have access to the educational guide, and I think does everybody need guidance to choose a youth program? I don't know. I don't think so.
And one of the themes also was that the satisfaction rate went lower, yeah. lower. And I think this relates to issue of the implementation of the services. So in a way, if we are having careers education, one of the aims is also, in addition to reflecting oneself, but to helping the learn how to use the existing yeah. different channels. And if this is ignored, it might be that they might not be able to use them.
Yeah, and the e-guidance practitioner, they are stressed now. In 2014, they have plenty of time to make chat. They could have a chat with a duration of an hour and so on. Now they are pressed, so they actually are training to have two chats at the same times now. Yeah, and I know that some of the guidance practitioners of Aarhus University, they have 10 students at the same time chatting. So they have a lot of performance in the guidance center, yeah.
And we have one question from the audience.
Yeah, my question is, to what extent have your career management competence developed in your school system? Because the rationale for my question is that if there would be a very strong system in the school setting where students get engaged in developing career management competence, yeah. then it would be much more easier to use such a system yeah. and your differentiation would probably fit or could fit
yeah.
to some extent. There are still some people who are highly skilled and yeah. still need personal counseling.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on yeah. this. But this, I think, is crucial. If to what extent you would have a kind of backing in the school system yeah. that students know how to use all this, yeah. because otherwise it's a little bit too much in open
yeah.
space.
Yeah, I agree, and the government has a focus right on this item just now, and you can call it the CMS skills or whatever. And in many schools, the youth guidance practitioner have the teaching and the learning by the CMS skills from the very start of the school start and so the school leaving. But in Denmark, it's not mandatory that the schools is a subject together with to be safe in the traffic and sexual learning and then education systems. So we can't control how many hours or how much time the schools use in that at that subject.
In Finland, careers education is a subject in a student timetable, and in the national core curriculum in 2004, we made a compulsory element in this career education that all the students, before they leave the comprehensive nine-year education, they have to be introduced to the online existing career information systems. Yeah. Exactly, that they know where they are, what are the functions and features, and what are the quality elements of them. So in a way, this is an issue that if we are promoting the services, we have to provide information how to utilize them. Another question from the audience before going to Estonia. We'll leave with some time for Estonia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I do it now, or should I wait? Yeah, sometimes I'm too fast, yes, and then I do not want to raise questions all the time. First, let me make one remark. I'm not the digital generation, not totally, but I really like the topic, and I have two sons, and I have a personal vision. I think we should, as I see what is happening there, and my personal vision is that they have the skills developed in schools and then all tools gathered online so that they can do most by themselves. Yes, this includes information, this includes access to services and maybe also to self-help tools like tests. Mm. And I see that many countries are developing these things. And then I have one remark, and maybe it's a bit provocative. Yes, I would like to make it provocative. I'm against the notion of e-guidance, and let me explain you why. Because e-guidance is related only to one channel, Yes, and this channel has self-help tools and it has interactive elements. As we heard from Denmark, these interactive elements can come quite close to face-to-face interviews in terms of resource intensity and the quality of guidance services delivered. And as I was working with the public employment services, and there we had first also not quite a sexy word, it was integrated multi-channeling. So this is the technician word for a concept that is not thinking on e-services alone, but from a management point of view, what are the implications for the other channels and which way of working is the best and what does it mean for restructuring the whole service concept. And in the end, we found a notion, and this is my preferred one at the moment, and it might be for your consideration, it is blended service delivery, and why not call it blended guidance? Yes, because I think in the end it is not about e-guidance alone. It is really to develop a concept, who does what for whom, and then there can be different policy decisions or management decisions, how to steer which group of clients to which type of services.
Or even further, we could call it ecosystem of guidance. let's take a question from Sasan Miklanovic, Slovenia.
Thank you. I think we came to the most important point when we talk about e-guidance. Nowadays, with the technology and so on, it seems not to be so difficult to develop portals with database, even portals which include tools, self-assessment tools, and so on. But the main question is really about which you raised, Hanne, and it's not a surprise. I mean, for perhaps few of us who work, you said that the satisfaction, if I understood well, that the satisfaction of clients with e-guidance services is going down. Please correct me if this is. So I think the real challenge for us is how to use wonderful advantages, which e-guidance definitely has, but basically integrated in other service provision, something what Susanne said. I think this is the main challenge. I think we can't say e-guidance is bad. E-guidance, these are tools, and it's on us how we use these tools. Thanks.
Yeah, actually, it isn't a surprise for us that the benefit of using the e-guidance is lower this year than last year. And we have a long, long tradition in Denmark, and I think in other countries, that guidance is face-to-face guidance. And I think in the Youth Guidance Center, there was they were not happy when we launched the e-guidance center because they could see now we lose the face-to-face guidance session with the strong students. We only have the weak one, the one who don't perform in the lower secondary schools, the one with the parents you never see, and with all the problems. So the youth guidance centers is having the best group in the lower secondary school, and it's tough and hard job. Yeah.
And we pick up one of the last questions to Margit. We got feedback the e-governance is very strong in Estonia, so you have the technology and infrastructure. So you mentioned that there are some challenges in the e-guidance. So just to briefly summarize, what would be the next steps to include guidance as part of the e-governance system?
It would mean, for example, that our guidance practitioners are aware what are the steps in the students' way of learning. So that we know the past decisions, we know where they are heading. And of course the communication online that should be supported. And what we are lacking is the actual analysis around it, how it is influencing. So we do a lot. We have many tools, many projects, but we don't use it for analysis. And then I agree that e-guidance can't actually replace face-to-face service. So it has to be a nice blend. So and we have to have the client in focus. So some people want to start from e-service, some people want to start from face-to-face, some people want to have one day one approach and then the other one.
Thanks. And one of the questions we're really with the competencies, ICT literacy, or what kind of competencies needed by individuals or practitioners, and Jana has been conducting research on topics, so she will comment briefly on this.
Just maybe two things. What has come up, of course, is the not solely the competency of the practitioners, but also increasingly practitioners acknowledge that there is a new need for them to support the competency and skills development of the citizens on this area. And also, it was mentioned here that international exchange, I would strongly put emphasis on us to creating and having possibilities to build and create the competency development on this area as together as Nordic Baltic countries have started and are organizing a summer school on this area next year.
Thank you. And I think we are now closing this session, and we have one more left after the coffee break, and then we are focusing on the policy development around the whole system. Thank you.
Thank you, Raimo and Jana, and half an hour. And please come back. 3:15.
Yes, and coffee will take place just...